Welcome back, friends. It's another episode of the Mindful CEO. I am Chris Angel here with Aaron Hendon. As always, hello, Aaron.
Hi, Chris.
Good to see you. And we got a special guest today. That's exciting.
It is very exciting. All right, I'm going to introduce Jeff. Okay. So this is Jeffrey Lipsius. Oh my God, I got it wrong. Lipsius. Oh my God, I said it so funny. Lipsius. I made sure I could say it right. And then as soon as I got on, I
That's great.
Completely watch it. Because of course that's how that would go. What's that? Yeah, so Jeff and I, Jeff reached out to me after our Inner Game episode.
Yeah.
Reached out to me through LinkedIn and, you know, wanted to talk to me. And I'm like, all right, who's this guy reaching out to me? Someone, one of the five people that listens to the podcast. How cool. And it turns out that Jeff has been working with Tim Galway, the author of The Inner Game of Tennis, for 50 years and, you know, really heard what we were talking about, what we were building, and thought it was interesting and that it was useful and wanted to connect. And I was blown away that someone actually affiliated with the Inner Game model would be reaching out to us. And Jeff's been using the Inner Game of sales for years, many, many years. And about 12 years ago, started officially training salespeople in the Inner Game of Sales, and has a great book that I'm sure he'll share with us as we talk. But it was just such a delight to get there. It is Selling to the Point. And it's just really is the marriage of mindfulness and sales. And I was really excited. Jeff and I had a great conversation, invited him on the show, and here he is. Okay. So Jeff, really, thanks for being with us. I really appreciate your time and all the work you're doing in the world. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Chris, for having me. It's really refreshing to be in the company of some people who want to take a more conscious approach to their business. And it's really a pleasure to be on your show. I was really looking forward to this.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, let's dive right in just with that, taking a more conscious approach to business. Tell me about, you know, how you hear that in relationship to sales, in relationship to the work that you and Tim have been, you know, have done all these years. How does the Inner Game of Tennis, or the Inner Game of Sales, or the Inner Game of anything really apply to consciousness and a conscious attitude toward business? How are those things connected for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, people think that you have to make a choice. Are you going to approach business consciously, or are you going to just try to perform and be as successful as possible? And not only do they go hand in hand, where you don't have to choose one or the other, but in fact, it turns out, and this is the magic of Inner Game, when you approach a business task in a conscious way, you get a better result. On the outside, you're more successful. And at the same time, it's more fulfilling. Mm. So, in fact, what I've learned over the years is that applying this Inner Game approach to anything, first thing, you get a better result, which was what I was interested in the first place, applying Inner Game. I was an aspiring tennis pro, and I got this idea that if I could practice my mindset the way I could practice my forehand and backhand, I'd be a better tennis player. I'd get better results. So I started, learned Inner Game. I started meditating. Turned out that not only did it help my tennis, but it made me more conscious as a person and all the other aspects of my life as well. So you could do both. As a matter of fact, you have to do both.
Yeah.
Why do people, Jeff, why do people resist mindfulness? Because as you're saying here, I'm like, everybody, mm-hmm. I would think everybody would be rushing to, you know, jump into mindfulness. And yet I feel like there's some resistance maybe out there, like it's soft or it doesn't work, mm-hmm. or it's woo-woo or it's whatever.
I could express it in one word. Trying. Okay.
Say more, yeah.
People feel that they have to try to achieve something in order to achieve it. And what Tim Galway brought to the world, probably his biggest contribution when The Inner Game of Tennis came out back in the 1970s, is that when you try to do something, you're actually sabotaging it. Now, let me explain this. Okay. So we're talking about performance. Let's talk about peak performance. Okay. Performing, if we were to use a working definition, we'd say that's performing beyond expectations. That means, by definition, you can't expect to perform beyond expectations. That's impossible. So, in other words, when you try to achieve something, you're actually interfering with it. For example, if you're trying to sleep, are you sleeping? In fact, it's trying to sleep that's the very thing that's going to still keep you awake. It's going to interfere. If I'm trying to like someone, do I like them? If I'm trying to have fun, am I having fun? In fact, if I'm trying to have fun, maybe there's something I would have liked, but I'm so busy trying, I'm distracted from noticing something that might have entertained me. As it turns out, trying interferes with performance. And so, if you're trying to meditate, are you meditating? Right? So, people think that they have to try in order to succeed. And it's the very thing holding them back. So,
love that.
I hear in that, Jeff, the sort of default addiction to doing the hustle culture. It's interesting because that's what you're pointing to, right? It's not just trying it's not for sure. Everything you said is accurate, right? Trying isn't doing, right? This Yoda taught everyone that, right?
There is no try.
There is no try. Okay. That's been clear in our culture since Star Wars, right? So thank God for you, right? But that, in addition to, it's the addiction to activity. It's resistance to slowing down, always the hardest thing for me to do, right? Even how I messed the game up in the beginning was a function, really, of not present, and slowing down enough is something that we resist. And it's interesting, particularly, Chris, that when you said that, I thought, I just read this yesterday. I was working on a blog post and I looked this up. Tim Ferriss, the other famous Tim, in writing Titans, the book, the interview book about Titans, icons, and world-class leaders, and what are their habits? And I forgot, it's a very long time. 80% meditate. It's, in fact, it was the single most common denominator between everyone he interviewed. Meditation. Which is completely consistent with what we would expect, but the resistance to it is a really phenomenal thing, because I do think people get, there's a big resistance to, well, I have to do something, as opposed to, no, really what you have to do is nothing. Doing nothing. And that was one of my big takeaways out of Inner Game of Tennis, was the results that showed up when people did nothing, you know, focused on something completely outside. Talk a little bit about that as it relates to mindfulness or meditation, consciousness, the ability to focus on something other than the target, and how that impacts performance.
Yeah, let me see. I can get out a chart here.
Yay!
Well, visual aids, yes. Okay. Very simple formula that I think would help you understand. Here it is. We perform by learning, and we learn by observing. Hmm. As we become better observers, we become better learners. As we become better learners, we become better performers.
Okay, that is so hot.
Hmm. Make sense?
Yep. It
totally makes sense.
Okay.
And that's really the heart of mindfulness is the ability to see something new and something we've already seen before.
Right, because the interference to observation is distraction. Hmm. So if we're distracted by internal thoughts, doubts, expectations, it's going to interfere with our ability to observe, which is going to interfere with our learning, which will interfere with our performance.
Wow.
It's so
like
simple.
A mind blower. I'm just sitting with that because that's like, it's like, I just like, nobody talk. I just want to sit in the presence of that for a minute. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can talk. I'm just saying, like, that was really good.
Well, and, you know, there's, now you could use synonyms to observation. You know, you could say awareness, focus, consciousness, clarity, you know, all synonymous, attention. But what you're basically saying is that really a true coach is going to help people observe, be better observers, because that's going to be the basis, the foundation for learning, which is the foundation for performance. Now, you notice I said learning, not teaching. Learning is inner and teaching is outer, right? So you can have learning without teaching, and you can have teaching without learning.
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, and this is another inner game principle, teaching interferes with learning.
Hmm.
So as people observe, they become better learners. And all the time we're teaching. When Tim Galloway gives a tennis lesson, he doesn't give a single instruction. And there's actual videos I could send you of Tim giving a tennis lesson to just beginners who are out of shape, middle-aged, never did anything athletic before. And in a half hour, he'll teach them a serve, a forehand, and a backhand to hit consistently over the net and into the court in a half hour's time. That would normally, a tennis instructor teaching, giving lessons, it would take about a year for that person to get the same level of competence. And how does he do this? By eliminating teaching, by eliminating instruction, and just building awareness, taking away their self-doubt.
I'm loving this, by the way. Just Aaron, I'm thinking about the Mindful CEO Mastermind, that what we do in a Socratic conversation is we have a conversation with one another that's spurred on by a question, but then what happens in it is the observation that we're all having about the conversation we're having. I just think that's, I'm just connecting mm-hmm. some dots here. I really appreciate, Jeffrey, how you're saying that.
I think it is at the heart of a Socratic inquiry, and it's a little, it does sound like what Tim does in the lessons is, you know, is to watch and then he asks the questions and then people mm-hmm. answer for themselves. Okay, well, how did that feel? What did you, what else could you do? What would you, what do you see there is to do? You know, and so relate that to business now. I mean, you know, how you made that leap from, you know, Tim giving those tennis lessons to you training a sales team, and developing that kind of capacity and capability mm-hmm. with sales organizations. Talk about that. It's okay. Pertinent and fascinating.
Yeah. Okay. So I approached him. What happened is that originally I was got to be friends with Tim, and we stayed in touch over the years, and I didn't make it in the pros. So I had to get a real job, and I went into sales. So over the course of time, I became vice president of the company, And I got in touch with Tim and I said, hey, I have over 100 salespeople under me. Why don't we apply the inner game to selling and we could use my Salesforce as a laboratory? And Tim said, great idea. And we started applying the inner game to selling. One of the first things he said to me was, you have to understand that the inner game is really the outer game. And the outer game is really the inner game.
We're sitting in paradoxes, Aaron.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's enough.
Keep going, Jeffrey. No, it's good. I love it.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
So this tennis lesson that you would see Tim give, and what he would say to the students, since he's not going to give any instructions, is he'll do something like, okay, I want you to watch the seams of the ball and describe when I toss the ball, describe how the seams are rotating as they approach you. Or he might say, I want you to say bounce when the ball bounces on the court and hit the moment it hits the racket. And just say bounce and just say hit. You don't have to do anything else as long as it's simultaneous with the actual bounce and hit. Or he'll say, notice the shape of your swing. You know, all these different awareness exercises, okay? The seams of the ball is outer. It's not inner.
Right.
Okay? The shape of your swing is outer.
Right.
So he's applying the inner game by focusing attention outer.
Got it, yeah.
Now, what happened if he focused attention inner and said to the student, well, your backhand is bad because you don't have enough confidence in it. Well, I see whenever I toss you a backhand, you say, uh-oh. So you have to stop. You have to be more confident. Well, is that going to work? No. Because they'll be thinking about, are they confident enough or not? So the inner game is applied outer. And this is the difference, by the way, between inner game and mindfulness. Because mindfulness is inner for inner. Yeah, mindfulness is for inner peace. And inner game is for performance. Mm-hmm. Now, so you could say that inner game is mindfulness geared for external performance, which, like I said, originally, I was just trying to improve my tennis. That's why I was meditating, and that's why I was talking to Tim, is because I wanted to be a better tennis player. So my orientation for mindfulness originally was outer. So that's why inner game was a perfect fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, applying this to sales, the seams, a salesperson's ball, what is the ball for a salesperson? What's their equivalent of the ball? It's the customer. Okay. And for a salesperson, what would be the seams of the ball?
Well, conversation.
Their decision process. Yeah. The conversation is the seams of the ball. So a real sales leader is going to say to the salesperson, watch the seams of the ball, because ultimately you need a salesperson who thinks on their feet. I mean, no customer goes to the sales training, so they don't know what their lines are supposed to be. Yeah. So salespeople are always going to run into the unexpected. You can count on it. And you need a salesperson who's in peak performance is going to be a salesperson who is masterful at thinking on their feet. Agreed?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That involves paying close attention to the seams of the ball, to the customer's decision process. Okay. Now, here's the problem with sales leadership. You can't teach a salesperson to think on their feet. It'll interfere, right? You don't want them thinking about what they were taught at the home office when they're supposed to be paying attention to the customer.
Right.
Okay.
Think about thinking.
Right. So a true sales leader is going to say to the salesperson, I'm not your teacher. Your customer is the teacher. And my job is to help you learn how to learn from your customer. And that's how you apply inner game to business, where everybody that you work with is a leader, because ultimately we're all CEOs. We're CEOs in the corporation of us. All right.
I mean, where this podcast comes from.
Right. I mean, if I went to a job interview and I was going to be very, very honest with the person who's interviewing me, I would have to say to them, I'm interested in this job, but I have to tell you, I'm already have another company that I'm the CEO of, and I run this company. And I also have to tell you that that other company that I'm the CEO of is a priority for me over your company and always will be. And in fact, the reason that I'm applying this job is to help me with this company that I'm CEO of already. Now, the question you want to ask yourself, how many shares of your corporation have you sold to other people? Yeah. And what might you have to do to buy those shares back?
Yeah.
But as a leader.
That's killer.
Yeah. As a leader, you need to get out of the way and allow somebody else to be the CEO of their corporation and be the leader, and you're there to help them learn from observation, not create a distraction that's going to satisfy your ego because you want them to come back to you and say, hey, you know, I got this sale because I listened to you and I said this and that, just like you trained me to do on the script that I was reading. It's not the point.
Right. And it strikes me inside that model that, you know, mindfulness or meditation, in this case, we're talking about the 80%, that becomes sort of the, you know, the running through tires of the game. Those are the things you do to prepare yourself. Those aren't things that you do on the court, but those are the drills you do that prepare you so that when the person you're speaking with, you know, for me, the listing appointment or the buyer's appointment or the other agent negotiating, when that ball is coming back over, when they're saying what they're saying, I have practiced enough of my own inner game that I can hear something, I can see something in the conversation that I wouldn't be able to hear had I not practiced, had I not developed that capacity.
Right. Well, what one of the main things you're getting out of that practice, though, is the self-confidence that you're not going to have to think about. You're not going to have to, you know, be thinking about things when you need to pay the attention to the customer.
Right.
So what if you had that confidence to begin with without needing to practice, that I could just pay attention to this customer and let them tell me what I need to say.
And how do you practice? You said without practice, like how do you practice that? Or how do you get to that space where you have that confidence without having to practice?
It's paying attention to the point where you're no longer judging. Is this conversation going my way or is it not going my way? I mean, we go into I'm not saying it's easy, because at the end of the day, we're being paid, you know, based on what the customer decides. And we have hungry mouths to feed at home and everything else, and you know, quarterly goals and managers that are breathing down our back, who it's very important that the customer, enough customers say yes, but the customer doesn't care about that.
Right.
And since you and the customer, you know, need to, you need to get to the point where the customer, see, the customer's in control. Okay. A salesperson doesn't get a sale unless the customer decides the salesperson's going to get the sale. Mm-hmm. So the more you could turn your priorities off and the customer's priorities on, the more you could be conscious with them and be a part of their team and have them feel supported and have them feel heard. So you can start focusing on the quality of their decision process. You know, one of the things that salespeople don't realize is that, you know, customers have the same performance issues in their decision making that we have in our selling. That, you know, we feel we have to be confident as salespeople and go in there without having to think about our training. We've got to a point of what's called conscious competence, where we have our lines down so well that we don't have to think about them. Okay, well, that's great. But I think the magic is that you don't have to think about them. Not that you know them, that you're no longer thinking about them, so you could start thinking about and paying attention to the customer. Because here's one. Okay. Remember when I said the inner game is really the outer game and the outer game is really the inner game? Hmm. Okay. So I'll give you an example. So if trust, okay, if I talk to salespeople about trust and they're going to say, sure, trust, that's the most important thing. I got to earn the customer's trust. I got the customer has to think that what I'm saying is true. That's outer trust. That's the customer's trust of the salesperson. Now, to answer Aaron's question, well, what do you do to have that kind of confidence? It's back to observation. So what about inner trust? That would be the customer's self-trust in their ability to make a good decision. Okay. You won't get outer trust. You won't have the customer trusting the salesperson without inner trust, without the customer trusting themselves to decide if they can trust the salesperson.
That's good.
Okay. So tell the salesperson, be the salesperson's observation coach, and tell them to keep your eye on the ball. Watch the customer's level of confidence in their own decision-making ability. Do they show self-doubt? You know, if they have self-doubt, you know, how can you help them gain clarity so that they feel better about the decision they're making?
Really good. So good.
Yeah. I love that. I just want to go back to that thing about practice.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite words, Allen Iverson's conversation. But that thing about practice is, you know, we call mindfulness and sitting and meditation a practice. That's what it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. From that context, that's the world in which I've developed the muscle to quiet my mind enough that, you know, if I practice 10 minutes a day, for example, of sitting mindfully watching my breath, let's say, I will develop a capacity in a short period of time to be able now to observe the customer without my concerns for my own commission getting in the way, because I've practiced what there is to practice, which is watching my mind and quieting my mind quiet, as opposed to the kind of practice that doesn't make a difference, which is, you know, it's not even, and the truth is, you know, practicing script practice and practicing objection handling does matter in terms of my, you know, people not getting thrown. I have never heard that before. But I think the point that you're making, Jeffrey, and you should correct me because I'm sort of sorting this out for myself. Right? I tell what I train the realtors on my team when I train people on the phones, particularly, or anyone, I say, look, I can't give you the objection handlers. You got to get into the position of having the objection. Say whatever you say. And then come back to me and we can debrief, but there's just, I can only ever give you the opening salvo. I can only give you the serve. The next hit is going to depend on what comes back across the net. You can't predict that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can, given your, there's no way to handle every possible objection, as long as you are quiet enough with yourself, you can see the ball coming back over, and you have enough confidence in your ability to sell whatever it is you're selling, yourself, your product, your widget, whatever. You have enough, you can see that coming back over. You know what there is to say to instill. And the thing you're bringing to the conversation, which is unique, which I had never heard before, is you'll know what to say to become that buyer's coach in making the right decision for them.
Yes. Yeah.
I got that right?
Yes. You are your customer's decision coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is an unbelievably great context.
And yeah.
I love it. It's so empowering and so authentically aligned with what we're building and you know, in terms of people being true to themselves, because no one wakes up in the morning and goes, man, since I was three, I wanted to sell widgets. No one's ever.
Yeah.
Well, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to convince mom to give me an ice cream before dinner. How about that?
Yeah. That maybe.
Yeah. You know, by the way, children make great salespeople. You ever notice that?
Totally.
First of all, they close.
They close. They don't know no. They can't. Uh-huh. Oh my God. Jeff, you'll appreciate this. We were just talking about this last night. My kids, when maybe 5 years ago, so there could be more. I don't know. Time is messed up. Everything happened before the pandemic happened. A long time ago. They were young and they wanted cats. And I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person. And my mother had a fear of cats. And we were always raised to hate cats and think cats are less useful than dogs. And they wanted cats. I don't know why they wanted cats, but they wanted cats. And so they made a presentation. They got poster board.
Oh.
Like four poster boards that had charts of family happiness and the number of cats and a chart of who would watch the cat and graphs and the entire sales presentation of why get cats. And we have two cats. And they sold I get cats. I was like, all right, I can't deny the power of this presentation. I no idea where they got the idea to do a presentation with poster boards and everything, but they were
Yeah.
It was excellent.
Yeah. And they'll seek alternative decision makers.
Oh, completely.
Another thing you teach a salesperson.
Yeah. And they don't get deterred by no. No.
Oh, yeah, it's just learning. That's because it's learning. They're expert learners. And when they say no, when you say no, what they're really doing is learning how far they could push you.
Yes. It's really interesting.
To your point, I mean, if they're really good learners and they're really good observers, like they're just watching how mom and dad make decisions and pushing, hitting the ball over the net with mom and dad enough times to be like, oh, okay, this is how that typical response goes. This is how this goes. And learning in the process. Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, no judgment. Yeah, children are wonderful learners. I mean, I was talking to a friend about this. You know, when you have a family that has to relocate maybe the one of the parents got a job and they have to relocate to a country they don't speak the language. The children always learn the language first before the parents. Yeah. Because they don't have to try. So they're kids. They don't have to understand everything.
Right.
You know,
they have less baggage. They have less paths to give up. They have less conversations about themselves.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, really, on one hand, just to take it back to the inner game of tennis, what I hear is there's less of them to get out of the way.
Yeah. Yes.
Because that's the observe, learn, perform model is observe and learn as a function of, and everything that Tim teaches in the inner game of tennis is the less you that's there, the higher the likelihood of you being able to perform consistent with the intention. If the you don't see your own way, which is really the whole point of mindfulness, is to get out of your way, get all that identity in those conversations.
And you, when you see somebody who actually is in peak performance or talk to them afterwards, and you hear them describe, you know, it was like I was out of, I was playing out of my head. You know, it was like I wasn't there. It was like, I mean, and these, those experiences are so compelling that, you know, somebody could go through so many lengths just to have it again. But when they're in that period, of they're just out of the way, they describe. They're not even, you know, like conscious thinking of anything. Like last night, I saw this Italian tennis player just beat Djokovic. Huge upset. He was ranked 129 in the world. It only happened like eight times before where somebody ranked outside the top 100 beat the number one in the world. Happened last night at here in California. And you could just see the guy. He was expressionless. You know, he was just in the zone. And, you know, he's not thinking about, wow, you know, this I'm playing Djokovic and I'm doing. No, he had to be completely in the zone in order to achieve that.
And that's always the goal for people is how do I get in the zone? And you don't try. And if
you don't try,
it's going to bring it back. It's a good place to laugh.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's a full circle. I knew we'd
know. Well done.
But that is it. You can't try to get there. That's going to kill. And every time that we've ever been there, and everyone's listening has been there at some point, has been in the zone. The moment we have that thought, like, wow, I'm in the zone. Oh, I can't believe I thought that. Damn it. You know, because nothing brings you out of the zone quicker than the ego identifying itself as you. And now you're not in the zone because you're you again.
Or trying to recapture it. You know, you played great last time. You're going to try to do the same thing you did last time. And it never seems to work because you're trying to, you know, something that's spontaneous and in the moment, you're trying to recapture again. And it was actually the spontaneity. Once you have an expectation, then you're distracted. And so you want to, now, if you have a coach, you're talking about coaching, okay? The coach is going to help you be a better observer, ultimately, and help you be in touch with the things that keep you in the moment. And so a good sales leader will be the salesperson's observation coach. You know, what did you learn from that customer? You have an underperforming salesperson, and the manager calls them into the carpet and says, look, you can't miss your goal next quarter. You know, why are you're performing less than the other salespeople? I want you to go out there and tell me why your customers are not deciding in their own best interest. You know, what's their thought process? And I want you to report back to me why they're deciding not to buy, and, you know, get them aware, you know, rather than what are you going to do differently? Because you think about it, when a salesperson is feeling that kind of pressure, you know, well, you got 2 weeks to make up to your entire goal next quarter. And the salesperson's like, I'm going to do it. I'm really going to do it. I'm going to try extra hard. All right. If you are the customer of that salesperson who's going to try really hard.
Yeah, it's never going to go well.
How are you going to feel? You're going to feel like this guy's being pushy. You know, you're going to feel invisible.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the salesperson's trying so hard.
That's great.
Great. All right. Well, we can put a pin in it there, Jeffrey, because it's so perfect to leave it with the opportunity for us to develop the skill, the capacity of being an observer.
Yes.
You know, that's
a non-judgmental observer.
That's the definition of mindfulness is
yes.
Observe your thoughts, observe your breath, to become not your thoughts, the observer of your thoughts. And then you can observe, and your development in that will allow you to observe everything.
That's the answer to inner success. It's also the answer to outer success.
Love that thoughtfulness. Yes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think that's probably, and it's a good place to point them, Jeffrey, to, I'm sure this conversation has stirred up some interest in learning more. So if people wanted to get your book or learn more about what you do, like, and take their inner game further, like, where can people go to learn more from you?
Yeah. Well, send me an email, jeffrey.lipsius@gmail.com. I don't, maybe you could put it on your,
we'll put it in the show
notes. YouTube. Yeah. That's the easiest way to reach me.
Okay. And your book is available on Amazon?
Yes. My book is available on Amazon. It's called Selling to the Point. The book itself is a living example of observation because it's the only sales training book that's written in the form of a fiction novel. It's a story with a plot. It's got romance, got suspense. And yeah, that's because, well, it gets a little heated in there. Yeah. but I did that so the reader can experience learning from observation. The principles are emerging from the dialogue between the characters instead of me teaching how to sell.
Yep. So good. Awesome. Very good.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much.
Thank you. This is great. I love this. I love talking to some conscious people who are really out there aspiring to, you know, make the workplace a better place to live. And I so appreciate your work. And your podcast, Aaron and Chris. Thanks so much for having me. It's really been an honor.
Thanks, Jeffrey, so much. Thanks, Aaron. Yes. Great stuff. We'll see you next time.